ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
All right, folks, hello, it's Guilty Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast. This time around, we're going to be talking with Tim Mattson and Eric Billingsley about TV shows, movies, and all sorts of other nerdiness. Also, it was Nerd Day this past weekend, and I've got some interviews with some of the folks that made Nerd Day Crawford County possible. Also, a little surprise, Kyle Howell will be joining us, or he's going to explain the gameplay of the game Legendary, which is a kind of a deck-building game. It's like Ascension. It's not quite to the effect of Magic, where you have to have a build a huge deck. It's like Ascension, where you have deck and you turn them over and you play, you build your characters and your wars, whatever. Anyway, it's based on the Marvel Universe, and that's what made it very interesting. And Kyle loved the game, and he gave me a little explanation about the gameplay itself, so we'll be talking to him. So all sorts of these things, so I'm going to intersperse the discussion with Tim and Eric with the interviews from Nerd Day, and so that's what you're going to get on this week's Nerd Up Podcast. Let's get on with Tim, Eric, and me talking about nerdy things. Nerd Up! All right, welcome back to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson, and in alphabetical order, I've got with me...
Eric Billingsley.
All right.
Tim Mattson.
See, you guys had to go through the alphabet. I know that. I tricked you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway...
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say there'd be a test.
you never know with the pop quizzes. They can come up at any time, and they count as 70% of your grade. So, anyway.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we're back with another Nerd Up Podcast. We're going to talk about some TV shows, some movies, some comic books, some games, all sorts of random nerdiness. And this time around, I got a first recap Nerd Day real short and sweet-like. It was successful. We had Nerd Day here in Crawford County, Illinois. The 3 hours I was there, the room was pretty much full. Lots of people playing. They had a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament while I was there. There was also some people playing Magic. There was all sorts of demo games being demoed, I guess that's the best way to put that. There was a costume contest. Looks like Isaac's chances of winning are pretty high, so we'll have to see what happens when that happens, when the voting finally gets ready to be voted upon. What they did is the lady that's got the picture, she's going to be posting them, and then people are going to, you know, the more likes a photo gets, they're the winner. Let's see here. Isaac got to play a bunch of games there on the demo. He got introduced to the game Munchkin, and I understand, Tim, you've played Munchkin?
I have, yeah. It's a good time.
It looked like a lot of fun. Again, I was busy taking pictures and interviewing people, so.
It was fun.
In the background, Isaac's playing Minecraft. That's why he's not joining us. But, yeah, he said it was fun. And also, he played a game. Oh, Eric, have you ever played any played Munchkin or any of these types of games?
No, I have not.
Ah, okay. So we might have to turn you onto this because it looked like a lot of fun. Isaac's going to have to teach me how to play it. But also, he played a game called King of Tokyo, which was kind of like a dice battle game, and it had like kaiju monsters on it. I don't want to say Godzilla because they didn't use Godzilla because of copyright infringement, but they're, you know. A Megazord instead, and it looked like Godzilla somewhat. But anyways, it's sort of a battle game with dice. And let's see. We played a game called Attraction, which I thought was this is kind of a silly idea. It's the simplest idea. And you had to think about the guy that created this game and marketed it. Basically, it's a whole bunch of these really high-power magnets that are oddly shaped and polished. And you scatter them out on the table, and everybody playing gets a magnet. And what you do, you either flip it or you slide it across the table, and you create clusters by the attraction and north and south pole thing of a magnet. And you pick up a cluster, and the one with the most magnets at the end wins. And it was so simplistic in the idea and design, But I'll tell you what, we had a blast playing it. We played like two or three rounds of it. It was so fun. So it's amazing what little ideas people come up with. Let's see here. A lot of people enjoyed Legends Gaming down in Vincennes, Indiana. They were here. They're part of the Nerd Day process, and they were selling their wares, and they were the ones actually doing the game demos, and they had a buttload of games to demo, and all day long. We were only there for 3 hours, and Isaac, I think, like I said, played like three or four games, full round games, and everybody had fun. So Nerd Day was a success. And now to get onto the voting of the cosplay contest, and I'll be posting a link on the Nerd Up podcast page, Facebook page, so that people can vote on Isaac's picture. So vote early, vote often. That's the Chicago way. All right, this is Gil T. Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast. Got another segment of fun at Nerd Day, and I got with me Matt. Matt, what's your last name?
Carlson.
Matt Carlson. He's with Legends down in Vincennes. Legends family and hobby and games and all the fun nerdy stuff that, you know, is represented here at the Nerd Day. And Matt was one of the organizers of the event. Matt, so far, I mean, it's still early. We're only sitting at like 1:30 in the afternoon. How successful do you think it's been so far?
We've got a good number of people. We've got fewer Magic players specifically than we had before, but we've got a lot more variety in games being played, I think.
Yes,
this time.
A lot of variety. I've noticed you guys playing the Werewolf earlier, a little you didn't need anything to play the game, and that's kind of a cool concept. Everybody had cards to represent the characters, but that's about it. Right now, it looks like another game's getting ready to get underway. You brought a whole table full of games, role-playing games, card games, and everything. You want to talk about some of those?
We brought some of the like basic deck-building games like Ascension and Dominion and the Resident Evil deck-building game. And then we brought some pretty regular games, some popular games like Munchkin, and King of Tokyo is fairly popular. And then we also brought some of the games that people might be less familiar with, things like Formula D, which is a really fun, it's a racing-based game.
Uh-huh.
You race cars around a track, and you have different sized dice to indicate what gear you're in, things like that.
Oh, very interesting.
And then we've got Memoir 44 for those that are more historically minded. And then we've also got like quicker games, like Cthulhu Dice is a quicker game. Gloom isn't too long. Sorrow's a pretty quick game. And then we've got, if you want something that's a little goofier, a little more over the top, we've got the Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards Duel at Mount Skulls Fire.
Okay. Not only is it a mouthful.
It's a fairly tongue-in-cheek game of weird wizards battling in an arena.
Nice. Yeah, so there's plenty of variety for the people.
We're able to more focus what games we brought.
Yeah, you get more of a feel of what people want. Yeah.
Still give a good variety, but not need to bring an entire truckload of games.
Yeah, well, now one thing I do notice that I know this afternoon, I know a lot of the trading card game players are going to be coming in this afternoon. That seems to be the bulk. Every year, it seems to be the bulk of the players are the Magic players. Is that always true that you see?
I think the biggest difference is that due to the more competitive, longer-term nature of Magic, the players tend to be more likely to show up to an event, to a scheduled event, especially something with prizes. Whereas it doesn't have the appeal to like a general audience as much.
Right.
The players that play it tend to be a little more committed.
Yeah, they're already in their game. They've got, you know, you're right. It's got its own community. So, but I've noticed that. I like my son. One of the things here they got this year, and I know this is Abigail's aspect, but they have the cosplay contest. They've never had that before, and my son got involved in that. But it looks like he's actually getting involved on a game, and I like the idea that you have somebody that knows the games, and this is a chance for everybody to learn new games. Now, on top of that, you brought the new some of the games to play, but it's not all about freebies. You guys are selling quite a few products here. Now, the products I see, are they all new games, or how are you have your choice of inventory there?
All of our games are new in the sense that they're not used games, but some of them are a little bit older games. Flashpoint and The Big Bang Theory and Tok Tok are all a couple years old. Memoir 44 has several expansions to it. Dominion has several, and Carcassonne all have several expansions to it.
That's one of the things with most role-playing games and games of this type is that each year there's usually a new expansion coming out. The new games, or the old games, constantly stay new with the new modules, and I see that you got that. Now, Magic, I lost track. I haven't seen the game for about 2 years now. How many new expansions have they had on that?
Magic last summer had its 20th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
So it's 21 years in. So I think it's at 40-some expansions now.
Okay, yeah, so they're always constantly keeping... That's what one of the things about Nerd Day that they try to reflect here is that these games are not something that just sit on your shelf. Each year, there's something new, and that's why you need to attend each year. So, again, this is Nerd Day here in Crawford County, and I'm Guilty Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast. We'll check out some more stuff, talk to some more people later on. Thanks a lot, Matt.
No problem. Nerd Up!
Well, guys, it's been an interesting week in television. There's a new series Eric and I both watched. I think I really enjoyed. Tim, you didn't happen to catch Believe, did you?
I did not.
Well, it's pretty interesting. Eric and I were talking before we started recording, and it kind of reminds us of Firestarter, the idea of the Stephen King book Firestarter, and maybe the movie, I guess, a little. The little girl has these powers. And the government's after her, or somebody is, and somebody is on the good guy side, is trying to protect her. So, Eric, go ahead and start out. What do you think of this series premiere?
I really liked it a lot. It's from the writer and director, at least of the first episode. I'm not sure how much his involvement's going to be in the subsequent episodes, but it's Alfonso Cuarón, who is really hot property these days because he picked up a buttload of Oscars this year for Gravity, which he wrote and directed. And this is, he wrote and directed this episode, and it's also produced by King of All Nerds, J.J. Abrams.
That's right.
Who I don't know how he has time to do all of these things, you know, Star Trek movies, Star Wars movies, and about half a dozen different TV shows, but somehow he's juggling them all and doing a pretty damn good job of it, I got to say. But this is this is right up his alley. This is his type of material. And yeah, it does remind me a lot of Firestarter in the basic premise. Yeah, it's not necessarily the government that's after her this time. It's some rich guy played by Kyle MacLachlan from Twin Peaks fame.
Well, that's, I'll tell you what, Eric, that whenever they show Kyle MacLachlan on the phone at the beginning, you know, where they showed who the bad guy was, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a cool series. Because I love Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. Me too.
Especially all the David Lynch stuff he did. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's shaping up to be really good. I forgot the actor's name that plays the main good guy, the priest. His name is escaping me right now.
Oh, I know. I can't think of his name either. So,
but he's done a lot of stuff and very, very enigmatic and charismatic actor to play that part. And it also reminded me a little bit of the canceled series Touch that Kiefer Sutherland was in.
I never
for
got
two
a chance
years.
To watch that.
It was a good show. It was a little slow at times. It wasn't, I mean, it kind of didn't know whether it wanted to be a personal show or an action show, and it kind of was a weird hybrid, and the second season drastically changed the format from the first season. So I think that may have been why it couldn't hold on to its viewers, but it was a really interesting idea, and it was created by Tim Kring, the guy who created Heroes.
Yep.
And so anyway, it was an interesting show, and I followed it to the end, but it was basically this autistic child and his father, and there was this evil corporation that was after the kid because of what he could do for them. He was amazing. He could see connections between people and things and mathematics that were way, way beyond anyone else's ability. So it was the same kind of premise. So this Believe really is kind of like a in that tradition. And but this one proves to be to have a lot more action.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people got killed or severely injured in the pilot, but there were a lot of people. The girl, the Kung Fu girl, I mean, she's just like ruthless.
Right.
But it's I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good series. I like you said, it's got a lot of action to it. If they keep that up, they're definitely going to keep a lot of TV audience glued to it. Because that's one thing that keeps a show on TV, on television, it seems like, is, you got a great storyline, but if you go throw in some action, you're going to keep more people tuned in. And I like the little, I've decided something here, by the way, on the podcast. When it comes to television shows, there's no such thing as spoilers if it's already aired. Or if a movie is more than 3 years old, there's no such thing as spoilers. So I want to say that the whole idea, the mystery of teaming this little girl up with this guy, and then later revealing that, could be her father. I thought that was an interesting intrigue. Now,
And I wasn't sure about that myself, because here's the thing is, like, at the beginning of the show, you see her with these two people that you assume are her parents.
Right.
And then you find out that they were her parents for all of 2 weeks. But she says they were – they still refer to them as being her parents. So when the main good guy refers to him as being her father,
right.
I'm like, okay, is he speaking literally or is he speaking figuratively?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think maybe they kept that vague on purpose. So we're still not 100% sure, but I'm leaning towards it being literal because of the way that they slipped it in there that way. But who knows? You know. But it's an interesting spin nonetheless because, you know, he's a very reluctant. He's this, you know, criminal. I think they even said he's a murderer. But he's, you know, he's very reluctant and but he's a good guy. You can tell he's a good guy on the inside because when push comes to shove, he does the right thing.
Yeah.
But he does so reluctantly, and that's going to be the dynamic throughout the show. And something else I wanted to say too that was just like Touch. In Touch, they would kind of, or at least in the second season, they were on the run, so they would be in a different place all the time, and they would encounter new people for that episode. It was very much like we talked about last time, the formula for The Incredible Hulk,
yeah, exactly.
Where he's in a different town every week, and you know there are people in that episode that may or may not be in any other episodes that you see, but they interact, and somehow they manage to change each other's lives, or the main character changes their lives or solves a problem for them. Or anyway, that seems to be the formula that they're gonna follow. But you know, it's only been one episode, so a lot remains to be seen.
Yeah. So basically, lots of mystery, intrigue, lots of action. So at least in the pilot, they even have some good emotional moments. You know, it's like, hey, let's tug on those heartstrings a little bit more. And yeah, I think they got a good formula for it. Plus, again, the storyline just I thought was really neat. And they haven't really fully revealed what this little girl's powers are. You just know that she's got something going. And they haven't
Right.
fully revealed what they are. And I think that as the series progresses, they will. And I think that'll be a good progress in the storyline. So, well, moving on to another one here. We were talking about this before, kind of, sort of. We were talking about Marvel and how they were able to develop the universe and how DC can't seem to get that together. Well, we're this week on television, in place of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're going to have a special Joss Whedon creating a Marvel Universe special about how they're tying all these TV shows and stuff in. How's that? I mean, that's going to be cool. I think, Tim, you
should...
I'm hoping that it's going to be cool. It could be out just another PR fluff piece that doesn't really tell us anything, but I'm hoping that it's going to be a little more than that.
Yeah, and like Tim, like you said last week, they've got, you know, step-by-step instructions on creating this universe. I think that's what this special is supposed to be about, is the universe they're creating and how they're going to tie it all in.
Yeah, it sounds like DC ought to really be taking some notes here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. DC Comics will be tuning in that week, so... But I thought that was interesting. We just talked about it, and then I see next week we'll be showing you the Marvel Universe. I'm like, cool.
Well, while we're on that, what did you think of the last episode? You know, Sif versus Lorelei.
You know, and the one thing here's, it is a TV series, and they are 1 hour episodes. I'd have liked to have seen more battle time. You know, more of this, but they ended all within the 1 hour show time period. But I'd like to have seen maybe a 2-episode continuation of that. Because I think she was just too easy to be caught.
That's a good point, and I would have liked to have seen a two-parter as well. But that much said, it's really, I mean, compared to the amount of action we've seen in previous episodes, mm-hmm. I really felt that they ramped it up, not just in the amount of action that was in the episode, but in the action choreography. I thought that the action sequences, the set pieces, were really well thought out and very exciting to watch in this. So I really liked this episode a lot.
What do you guys think of that sword fight in an enclosed space like that between Lorelei and Sif?
Yeah, again, like I said, it was a good set piece. I liked it.
I actually haven't seen that episode yet.
Oh, man. Oh, well, the spoiler here, bud. But
yeah, No worries.
I'll tell you what, to choreograph that fight scene had to have been some serious... They had to have some serious rehearsal time on that because it was such a tight space to have a fight with two swords. Or actually, one sword that broke in half, but you know.
Yeah.
But I was watching that and I'm like, I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm like, someone's gonna get hurt. that's a small space. But I think they did a good job. I would have liked to have seen it last a little bit longer, a little more of the chase maybe. But it's a great way to introduce the rest of the Marvel Universe into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And like we it's been discussed on this podcast before. They've got it. You know, they know us, have step-by-step instructions of what they're doing. So I'm not going
to complain. And while we're talking about this, and this relates to what we were talking about last week about DC's reticence to do a movie for Wonder Woman. Okay, this is another thing that proves, okay, you've got Lorelei, you've got Sif, and you've got, what is her name, the May Wen?
Or
Yes, three women who kick serious ass, and I mean, this was one of the best episodes ever. Uh-huh. I think most nerdy guys want to see chicks who can kick ass. Heck, I mean, that's just my opinion, but
heck yeah. Well, I think that as they introduce more and more characters, I would love to see it. I mean, like we talked about, you know, in the next Avengers movie, they're going to have Scarlet Witch. They've got Black Widow, and I mean, that's one female, but they're going to introduce Scarlet Witch, and I think they're supposed to introduce the Wasp. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But if they're going to introduce Ant-Man, they got to introduce Wasp. So it's kind of a must-do. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, I think they have the idea that, hey, women can be just as badass as guys.
Hell yeah.
And they're not afraid to show it.
All right, I'm Guilty Wilson with another segment of the Nerd Up Podcast live from Nerd Day. Okay, it won't be live because you're going to be hearing the podcast after the event's over. But, you know, you got what I'm saying. I'm here talking with Abigail. She's the artistic nerd.
Yes.
I like that title. That's a good title.
Yes.
It's one to be jealous. I guess I would be the audio nerd. Anyway. It works. So you are pretty much coordinating the cosplay contest.
Yes.
And you're also doing you did the artwork for it. That's why the artistic nerd part, which, by the way, nice poster. That was really
cool.
Thank you. And let's see, you also helped put together the Facebook page and the event page.
Yes.
And you actually did most of the work, didn't you?
Yes.
So how do you think the turnout's been so far?
So far, really good. Better than I pretty much expected.
That's a good thing. It's always good to have more people than you expect. Now, I've noticed when I came here, there was a rousing game of Werewolf. I think that was the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was going on. A couple rounds of that went on. You were involved in that.
And I died.
You did?
I died.
Darn it.
I was but a humble villager.
Well, then I guess you didn't have much defense. So.
Yeah,
true. But then I've noticed also a couple other demo games going on. The folks down at Legends brought some games to demo, and which is pretty much what this event's about, to introduce people to the gaming system. LARPers? Or is it just people brought up
LARPers.
Phone swords? Okay. I knew they were going to be here. See, that was one of the magic secret words, by the way.
I thought they were boffer weapons to begin with. No, they're not boffer weapons. Well, technically, they are, but...
Well, they're boffing each other pretty good.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I got a few videos for the page.
Okay. So. How is the cosplay contest going so far?
I think there's four people so far.
Four. Well, it's still early.
Yeah.
But then
With the magic players coming in, more than likely, if there's a few that I know from the past, like, three times that I've been...
Mm-hmm.
There might be a few cosplaying in their get up or whatever, kind of like what William's in, but that's...
Well, this is the first time cosplay's ever been at Nerd Day, though, isn't it?
No.
A contest,
I think,
yeah.
But about, you know, for the cosplay, random stragglers throughout the day is what I've been told. I mean, I've only went three times, and this is my first time actually hosting it.
So the first time you're in charge. Well, because I don't think I've ever seen a contest here before. I've seen the people come in costume a lot, especially when the LARPers get involved.
Yeah.
So, because that's what struck my attention, is like there's actually a contest, there's actually awards for... first, second, third prize.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good idea. And so that's where a lot of people, you know, you come in and pay. It's only $2 for 12 hours, 13 hours possibly, of an event. And you can have fun all day long. And the cosplay contest is free with your admission.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get, what was it, $50?
$50, $25, and $25.
Okay, for first, second, third. And, I mean, you can pay $2 to get in here, have fun all day, and still walk out with $50.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a good deal. So, but, now let me ask you this. The pictures for the cosplay contest are going to go up on the Nerd Day page,
They're
right?
They're going to go onto the page. They will be shared to the group because it's easier sometimes to find the group and then go to the page.
Mm-hmm.
So they will be shared on both.
Okay.
And they will be watched on both.
Okay. Okay.
I would prefer the page to be liked and commented on.
Right.
But... if not, you know, they will be watched on both because likes and comments will go for votes.
And so if anybody, like, let's say, for example, somebody that dressed up as Scarlet Spider wants to, you know, get more votes, he shares it and he can share it from either one of those
yes.
pages. So.
But if they share it from the group, they need to definitely keep track of the voting, mm-hmm. you know, their likes and comments, because when they share, most of the times it will not come back telling me that
right.
they've shared it.
Right. So
they will need to get in contact with the page or with the group or me to tell me, okay, this is how many I got altogether.
Yeah, so I think it's easier to go from the page, go to the, it's actually facebook.com/nerdup. Herbs, not Nerd. That's me. Nerd Day,
Crawford
County. Nerd Day, Crawford County on Facebook. Find it, and you can go vote for all the. There's apparently there's a little bitty entry.
He's adorable.
A little Superboy entry.
He's adorable.
And hey, it's cosplay because he's dressed up like Superboy. Yes. He is a cute kid. I got to give him that, but not as cute as my son, who's Scarlet Spider. So, and I take it you're Zelda.
At the moment, yes. The was Link. Now I'm Zelda.
Now, are you planning any more costume changes?
No, this is the last one. And then I'm going to get into my Yu-Gi-Oh shirt, but that's about it.
Okay. All right, well then, let's see here. So, successful so far. We're not even halfway through this. And it's just a great event. All sorts of new games to be bought, games to be tried out, costume contests. You're going to do that? Now, are you going to be...
Brittany's over there. I'm sorry. thank you.
Interview. Shut up. Focus on Gil. He's the king of the universe.
According to me, I am.
I thought your wife said that.
Are you going to volunteer your time again for the next Nerd Day?
As long as Joe allows me to take over again.
Okay.
And if Matt says okay to being part of the help again.
Okay. Because I just wonder, after the undertaking, I guess, of this, so you're not overwhelmed after then you didn't go run away screaming. Okay, good.
Actually, if you, especially Kyle here, if you ask Tim, I've been ecstatic since the beginning. I have not had a worry the entire time.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, okay, sure, we'll go with that. So, yeah, that's one thing. I know the Nerd Day planning committee, I mean, the people, they come up with the ideas, and then, you know, there's so many ideas, that finally someone just has to jump in and say, okay, let's do it. And it seems to be that you've done a lot.
Yeah, because we had meant to do it, let's see, when was the last time we did it? Sometime in the summer, I think, last year.
Yeah, it was in the summer. Yeah, it was in the summer.
And then he had meant to be back he had meant to have one again that fall. But, you know, life happens and everything blows over. And finally I got to this year. Okay, it's been like almost 6 months since we had the last one. I have time on my hands. Do you mind if I take over? And Mr. Joe was like, okay.
Let's do it.
I just said I just need somebody else with me to at least help take care of, you know, like thinking of money, thinking of planning, thinking of who I need to, you know, think about to go to. And Matthew stepped in and said, hey, I don't mind. And so... I said, I'm fine with that.
It works out. Again, people come for tournaments. They come just to check out the games. And it's, like you said, in waves. And it's going to be perfect, I think, throughout the rest of the day. So, all right. Well, hey, keep up the good work. So, thanks again, Abigail.
All right, Eric, you had another TV show. I didn't get to watch it, but what was the other one that you were going to talk about here?
Yeah, it's Resurrection. And second episode is on tonight. And this one I saw advertised a couple of times, but they advertised it a few times during the Oscars the previous week. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this looks really interesting. I want to check this out. Again, it's another, sci-fi supernatural premise, but the approach that they're doing is not so much, they're not playing up the supernatural / sci-fi elements as much as they are the personal elements. You mentioned like the heart tugging in Believe. Well, there's a lot more of that going on in Resurrection, but it's not in a corny manipulative way. It's in a really inventive and thought provoking way. Mm-hmm. The premise is, you know, you see that at the very beginning of the episode, this boy, I think he's around 8 years old, wakes up lying in a rice paddy in the middle of nowhere in a farm village in China.
Okay.
Has no idea how he got there or why he's there, but the word gets back, you know, that he's this American kid, and they ship him back to the United States, and this guy from the immigration agency who's basically takes charge of him to try and find out who his parents are and what, you know, who he is. And this guy who's taking charge of him is obviously a central, if not the central character in the story. finds out from him that, you know, he's from this small town in Missouri, and he takes him back there, even though he calls ahead and the sheriff is like, nope, nope, we don't have any missing kids. And it's just rather curt with him. But there's a story behind that as well. Mm-hmm. He takes him back to the town, and the kid, you know, tells him how to get to his house. And it, you know, turns out that the kid died 35 years ago, drowned in a river. And, you know, needless to say, his parents, who are now much older, are absolutely shocked to see him. But the kid acts like, you know, he hasn't missed a beat, and, you know, goes in and sits down and just, you know, there's obviously something's going on here. The father, who's played by, oh God, I can't remember the actor's name. He's the one that played Red
in that
70s show. Yeah. And he was the bad guy, Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop, who I always remember him as. Yeah. Anyway, he's the father, and he's still not 100% convinced that it's his son for real. And there's a whole storyline going on with that. But as if that's not enough, you find out by the end of the episode that this kid is not the only one who has returned from the dead. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be many other people who have returned. And so far, it seems to be all centered in this one town. So there's this huge mystery going on. But it's like I said, it really centers on the interpersonal relationships. What is the impact of this kid coming back after 35 years being dead? Plus, they thought that, you know, he had basically fallen into a river and his aunt had been walking nearby and had jumped into the water to save him, and they both drowned. Mm. Well, now that the kid's come back, he's bringing some details that show that, no, it's not quite as simple as that, and that there may have even been foul play involved. Yeah. That he actually tried to jump in to save his aunt because some guy had pushed her in, or it seemed like some guy had pushed her in. So there's a whole mystery going on there as well. But this kid coming back, all these people who knew him as a boy are impacted by this, including a preacher who was the kid's boyhood best friend. And now this preacher is having this crisis of faith because he tells his wife, he's like, you know, every Sunday I preach about, you know, miracles. And now that one's staring me in the face, I don't know how to deal with it. And so it's repercussions like that really make this an interesting show to watch. And there is those moments that, you know, yes, a lot of people are going to watch each episode and probably burst into tears. I didn't, but I could see how people are going to be affected that way. But I did get many moments where I just got goose flesh because of these revelations and how these people were reacting to this. Mm-hmm. It's just a really interesting show. Highly recommended.
I just have one question. Didn't the kid notice that his parents were all wrinkly and older?
He did. Later in the episode, he mentions that about them looking different.
Okay.
Now, I've read some things online that apparently this is very, very similar to a French TV series called The Returned, which aired on the Sundance Channel. And I think I've got it DVR'd or recorded somewhere. And one of these days I'll get around to watching that series. So I can't speak as to, you know, how valid that comparison is. But one thing that occurred to me watching this is I was like, okay, I think I know exactly what was the germ of the idea that started this story. A couple of years ago, there was a documentary that was released that was very critically acclaimed called The Imposter. And to try and sum it up as quickly as possible, this Texas family, their son had disappeared when he was, I don't know, 8 years old or whatever. Many years have gone by, 10 or 12 or more years, I think 16 years. And some kid shows up in Spain, not a kid now, you know, a young man who claims to be this long lost boy. Okay, they bring him back to the U.S. And even though this guy has an accent, has different color hair, different colored eyes, this family still accepts him as being their long lost son.
Huh.
And there's a whole story behind that and why they reacted that way or may have reacted that way. And there's implications that this family may have actually, or some member of this family may have actually murdered this boy and buried him somewhere. But that's inconclusive because they haven't been able to find any proof. But that seems to be the implication. But anyway, I can see how the writers of this show would have seen that documentary or heard that documentary and kind of extrapolated this idea from that, because it is very, very similar, at least in the setup, you know. But anyway, I mean, that's just my theory, but it is interesting.
Well,
you know, Eric, you've already made this so much more interesting to me than the trailers, the promos have been. because I think if they focused this down and really made this story about this boy rather than this whole phenomenon of all these different people coming back, to me that's not as interesting as if you tell a more tightly focused story. Because I just get a feeling that this is going to be another one of those, you know, mystery shows where clues are parceled out little by little and you have this long-running mythos that it's revolving around, and the story just kind of gets lost in that muck. You know, I kind of think of it as similar to what Lost.
Yeah, I was
suffered.
Thinking the same thing as you were talking about that, Tim. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tightly focused story to begin with, and then it just seemed to spin out of control.
Right.
Because they didn't start, you know, thinking, oh, we're going to have to write for 5 seasons. You know, they had this idea and they started working with it. And then when they found out, oh, well, God, we've got to go 3 more, 4 more seasons. They didn't really have a story that would support that long of a story. And I kind of fear that that's what this series is going to be like as well.
You may be right. That is definitely a danger of this now. And let me just say at this point, too, that these are both first episodes of a new series. And it is entirely possible that both of these series may go 100% in the wrong direction. I mean, you know, I've seen so many shows that started off good and just went downhill from there. And I hope that doesn't happen to these two. But based on just the first 2 episodes, my hopes are pretty high for both of these. Now, that much said, I was a big fan of Lost, and I understand where the show did go. Like, I think it was probably around the third season that
season 3 was it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about where it started to go off the tracks. But fortunately, in my opinion, at least, that towards the end of season 3 and definitely in season 4, they brought it back into control. I think it was about the time that they decided that, okay, we're only going to let this go 6 seasons and then we're going to end this sucker. Mm-hmm. And once they had a goal, a point that in the future that they wanted to write toward, then everything's starting to tighten up again. And in my opinion, by the time the show ended, it was I really liked the way the show ended. Now, a lot of people disagree with me on that. A lot of people hated the way that Lost ended. But to me, it was the thing that really made the show work was it was about the characters. There were some interesting mysteries that went on within the show that kept you, you know, watching week to week. But it ultimately was really the characters that drove the show. And so the way the show ended was based on those character resolutions, not on resolving every little mystery that popped up on the show. And I think that's what really ticked a lot of people off. But this show is definitely so far about the characters. And you could be right if, you know, that it did occur to me. It's like, okay, if this was just this one boy that came back and no one else, I could see that idea alone sustaining this entire series. So what is having all these other people come back going to do? Is it going to fragment it? Are they going to have too many balls in the air, so to speak, wind up dropping them all? That remains to be seen, but I know. Did anyone see the show The 4400 on USA's?
I saw it, part of it, but they lost me on it about halfway through.
Yeah, and I think that was the problem, is they had too many characters that they were trying to follow, and it wound up feeling really watered down. So hopefully this show, which shares a lot in common with that 4400 premise, hopefully this show won't fall into those same traps. So, you know, there's a lot to be seen. But so far, I mean, just based on these first episodes, I really like both of these shows.
Well, I think one of the things that I think it's a trap of American television is everybody wants a MASH, you know, that's going to last so many seasons, just keep going with its own little stories every episode. Or I'm trying to think of another TV show that lasted almost as long. But, you know, well, Friends. They want Friends. You know, they want a long-lasting thing they can be comfortable with, tune in every week. But I think American television actually starting to go away from that and actually saying, hey, we've got a story to tell. We've got this many shows. That's it. You know? And I'm hoping they'll keep going.
I think it's interesting that you pick 2 shows as examples that do not have an overarching storyline.
Right.
Right.
You know, you've picked MASH and Friends, which, you know, they could go on just indefinitely because they're very character-driven shows and there is no overarching story that has to get either tightened up and shortened for a short amount of seasons, mm-hmm. or just extended beyond its reach to fill 7 or 8 seasons when it really was only a story for 3 seasons.
Right. Yeah, and well, like MASH, you know, the Korean War had to end, I guess, at one point, but still, they could still have kept going. I mean, there were plenty of days in their lives, but and Friends or Seinfeld, even, you know, just
Seinfeld, yeah,
just keep going. Yeah. With they didn't have any single story to tell. They just had a whole bunch of little funny things on those two anyway. Oh, I guess same with MASH. They just had a whole bunch of little funny things to go on. But yeah, I think that's one of the downfalls of American television is everybody's wanting that. Even with, like, well, CSI or NCIS or any of those other initial shows, they have a story each week and that's it. They don't have one continuous story. I don't know if anybody else is like me. I like a story, a beginning and an end. You know, I like that. I mean, that's why I really don't watch like CSI and stuff like that. I'm like, well, I just know what's going to happen by the end of it. They're going to solve the case. It's done. It's too predictable.
Well, also, think about this. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever done any writing, but writing a short story as opposed to, like, writing a novel is a lot easier because, I mean, it, not just in the amount of time that it takes, but you only have a certain number of threads that you're going to follow in a short story, whereas in a novel, you've got many more characters, you've got many more threads. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more complex and a lot more difficult to pull off. Mm-hmm. That analogy works for these television shows. I mean, CSI and most sitcoms, they work on that short story basis. We have a 30-minute or 1-hour show, and we build in a story that has a beginning, middle, and end all within that 1-hour period. Whereas a lot of these other shows that do have episodic storylines, they make the mistake of trying to do both, and you can't most of the time. This story, or both of these stories that we've just been talking about, they're not stories that really can go on forever, although Believe could lend itself a little more to that than this one could.
Yeah.
But do you want that? I mean, do you want something that's just indefinite? I would much prefer that a serious creator say, okay, look, we know we can tell this story in 3 seasons. If you want us to go 4 or 5, it's not going to be as good. So yes. Commit to us for 3 seasons, and we'll give you a fantastic show. If you push us beyond that, we can't really guarantee it's going to be that great.
Yeah.
Well, look at one of the greatest TV shows ever on American television, Breaking Bad. They knew from the day one exactly where they wanted to go with this show and how long it was going to take them to get there, and they made no compromises. They did exactly what they wanted to do, and that's why that show is so damn solid, because they knew exactly where they were going to go with that show.
Yeah, and even after they started getting, you know, phenomenal ratings and winning all sorts of awards, they said, hey, we're still going to end it. So
that's the thing. I mean, there's no shame in saying, look, we only need 3 seasons to tell this story.
Yeah.
You know, that's our story. It's this long.
Yeah.
You know, people look at that and say, oh, wow, it didn't last long enough to be syndicated. So television show is a failure.
Yeah, well, but
it's not necessarily true.
Now there are some exceptions to that rule. Normally I would agree wholeheartedly. So yeah, just tell me a story and we're done, okay? But there are exceptions. Like for example, great sci-fi, like Star Trek. Let's see, we can even say Firefly, even though they canceled it before we could enjoy it fully. Those types of shows could go on forever, and as long as they had the good story per episode, they could still have the continuous arch of a story throughout, but I think each episode would build onto that, and you could still go on forever with them, and I'd still tune in, but that's not necessarily what I'd want all the time.
Yeah, I'm not going to devalue these other shows that are self-contained storylines, or even, you know, like Firefly that did actually have a continuing thread, but they still had, you know, these self-contained stories per episode.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know, it's apples and oranges. Those shows have their place and their value as well, but I tend to find a single storyline told over an extended period of time to be more involving and exciting than something that, you know, is just a self-contained episode. But that's my personal preference.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still enjoy a lot of those shows. Like you said, like classic Star Trek, there's almost nothing that ties one episode to another. There's no continuing storyline in those episodes. You can pretty much shuffle them in any order, and it's still going to make as much sense as it does in the order in which they aired. And I love that show to death.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, in this day and age, we have really gotten more into these continuing storylines, and I just in general tend to find those more intriguing, and it's doing them a disservice if they try to extend them longer than they should be.
Yeah. Well, like I said, these two shows that we just mentioned, Resurrection and Believe, Resurrection, I think that should have one story, and that's it. I don't think they should extend that one, and they probably won't. They probably have the plan. Now, Believe, they could have one story to tell and be done, but I could see that one as falling into the trap of saying, well, it's getting good ratings, let's keep going, and they could still add on, like you said, about the Incredible Hulk going from town to town, to, you know, escaping. And so there's the potential for that, but not so sure if I'd want it. So we'll have to see how these two shows go.
I'm Gil Pete Wilson here with another segment of the Nerd Day Nerd Up podcast, and I got with me Kyle. Kyle Howe, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Not and Howe, but Howe. Anyway.
You can throw out an and Howe if you want.
And I just ran across this really cool game here at Nerd Day. They got it up for sale from Legends and Vincennes. It's called Legendary, and it's a deck-building game based on Marvel characters. And first of all, Marvel, that sold me right there. On the cover of the box, there's Deadpool and Spider-Man. Okay, now I'm triply sold. It's made by Upper Deck, and it just looks like a fun game. Now, Kyle, I was talking about the game, and Kyle apparently has played it. Kyle?
Oh, yes, I've definitely played it. The whole Marvel Universe is represented in the base set.
Uh-huh.
There's already been at least one expansion that I know of. It's a deck-building game, mm-hmm. which I don't know if the listeners are familiar with deck-building games or not.
Most likely like Ascension or...
Yeah.
Ascension is the first one that comes to my mind.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, you basically start with, you know, even weaker than like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, you start with just basic things and then upgrade through the turns. You start with a set number of superheroes. Each turn you get your supervillain, the mastermind, you got your scheme twists, which it's basically like, okay, this is our happy-go-lucky universe. And one of the expansions was Dark City.
Oh, nice. I see Ghost Rider there.
We have Ghost Rider. We have...
Kingpin and Apocalypse.
Yeah, Kingpin, Apocalypse.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, the Dark City expansion, I forgot about. So there's Dark City, then there's the Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
It's a great game system. What I love about it mainly is you can really learn about the Marvel family.
Oh, yeah. Definitely
because the different abilities, the different equipment, it taps into the actual Marvel universe. It taps into the knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a great learning experience for me because a lot of the stuff I'd learned playing it, I'd never known before.
Well, I'm looking here on the cover. I mean, on this expansion, Dark City, you've got Colossus, you've got Cable, you've got Daredevil, you've got Ghost Rider.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the darker heroes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I like the theme they got going there. So that's pretty cool.
Now,
on the main setup I see here, now on the front cover,
yes,
we've got all your basics. You got Hulk, Captain America, Spider-Man, the normal ones. They have to be there. Otherwise, it's really not Marvel.
Right.
But
Loki.
Yeah, you got to throw in Loki and Magneto.
Yep.
And Emma Frost, I'm seeing. So basically, now tell me how the gameplay goes. What happens as you're playing the game?
Okay, the gameplay, you start with your basic deck.
Mm-hmm.
And during every turn, you roll up a new villain card.
Okay.
The villain town is set up. There's city, there's bridge, there's alleys, there's sewer, there's five different villain sections.
Okay.
When you start, you roll up a villain. Then a player takes their turn. You know, you can buy equipment off the HQ, a new hero card or whatever.
Uh-huh.
You can fight the villain, which the villain then goes into your loot pile, your booty pile.
Okay.
You get glory points.
Okay.
Or you can attack the mastermind. Mastermind has to be attacked, I think, 5 or 6 times to actually kill him.
Okay.
And every time you fight the mastermind, you get a bonus card from the mastermind, which can be either a good thing or a bad thing for all players.
Oh, okay.
So during your turn, you can either buy, you can attack the villain, you can attack the mastermind, or do whatever a card tells you to. And then at the beginning of each turn, you roll up a new villain.
Okay.
And if the 5 villain slots are full, you roll up a 6th villain, the farthest villain escapes. And frequently in the game, like it says, if 8 villains escape, the heroes lose.
Oh, okay.
So that's a way to lose.
Okay.
If any of the deck piles run out, the heroes lose.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's actually more ways for the villains to win than the heroes.
And there's the challenge. So, yeah.
Which, in all honesty, even in the Marvel Universe, the villains do have all kinds of ways to win.
Yes.
They have all the tricks. They have all the fun toys. You know, they've got all that.
Yes.
So the game builds that in. And also, one thing I like about it is bystanders. You know, you can rescue bystanders, which can give you heals.
Okay.
They give you extra glory points. And actually, a lot of the villains, capture bystanders. So, I mean, you can get a villain up there with three or four bystanders beneath him, which sometimes the bystanders gives him extra power and makes him harder to kill.
Okay.
Other times it makes him a bigger prize.
Oh,
so
okay.
There's all these different elements that you really, I mean, for something as simple as a deck, you know, first time I sat down, deck building game,
right?
You know, I'd never heard of it. Easy, breezy, lazy. Oh my God, you want to talk about having to think. And then you got to work into it, you know, the masterminds, a lot of them have certain elements or abilities they're weak against.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have heroes that have that, that mastermind's a pain to kill.
Right.
And then I've played games where you get the right heroes with the wrong mastermind and 10 minutes, the game's over.
You got to hold, not only do you have to, the deck building, it seems like it's going to be easy with just a draw of the cards, but no, you actually have to use a lot of logic, a lot of thinking, a lot of planning.
Yep.
So, therefore, and I like the idea of the mastermind has to be attacked. That's kind of like when video games, you have the boss battles in all video games. It's kind of like what that is. So. Nice. Well, legendary. Folks.
And, of course, it does work. Also work in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, no.
If you don't want to do anything else like buy a hero, you can buy a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Okay.
So, I mean, they even worked in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Marvel.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. needs to be worked into everything. They're really breaking out with that. So,
it works.
Well, thanks for explaining that to me. Now I might have to
I highly recommend you buy Legendary and all the expansions. And when you do, I better be invited for a Legendary party.
Definitely so. You will be.
I'll bring the snacks.
You got it, man. Hey, thanks a lot, Kyle.
Yep.
Arrow, that's what I wanted to talk about. They're already planning spinoffs, and this is one that can go on forever. This is one of those shows that, I mean, it's a comic book for, you know, for Pete's sake, it's a comic book. It'll go on forever. Arrow, they're really tying in some good stories, bringing the island. I think they're going to bring the island backstory to an end pretty soon, at least within another season. And plus, they're doing the spinoff with The Flash, and who knows what else they're going. What do you guys think of that series so far?
I'm still not watching it.
Me too.
I'm in the same place. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my gosh. Arrow, you got to catch up on it. They're really doing a good job with the storyline on that. And again, like I said, it's a comic book. They can go on forever with it because, you know, there's always going to be adventures with a superhero. And they're introducing, like the last episode, they had, was it Deadshot? Or Deathstroke.
Deathstroke.
Yeah, there's another character named Deadshot who's on there as well. Anyway, Deathstroke was on there, and all of a sudden, Arrow, he had the backing of the Black Canary. He had the backing of Speedy, his sidekick in the comics, and it's like all of a sudden, it's like a superhero team up, and it's like, wow, this is going to be a good episode. Now, no fight ensued because, Deathstroke's kind of backed out of it, but you can tell something's going to build up. And also, they've introduced the Suicide Squad, which is another run of DC Comics. They even relaunched it in the New 52, in which they have all these villains that are taking time off their prison sentence to do good. And looks like they're going to be bringing those guys back. You've got I was trying to remember all the characters. The Deadshot is one of them.
Are you talking about the comic book series?
No, well, yeah, the comic book series, but the guys are in Arrow, the Suicide Squad. But yeah, that's the same ones that are in the comic book series. Let's see, something Bronze Tiger is one of them also, and he has claws like a Wolverine almost. But anyway, they showed them recruiting those guys, and then they showed in the previews for one of the upcoming episodes that the Suicide Squad will be back. And I'm thinking they might do another spinoff of that series, too. So, looks like CW is definitely going good with the superhero television shows and the ones we won't mind watching over and over. And you guys really should get into that series. They're doing a good job with it. There's a backstory with it that they keep jumping back and forth. And there's times, we mentioned Lost earlier, there's times when they're telling the backstory of Oliver Queen and how he became the Green Arrow. And it's at times where it seems like I saw this on an episode of Lost once. So it's like, wait a minute. But they're doing a good job with it. So anything you guys want to yak about?
Is there a smoke monster on there?
Not yet, but there is some weird things. You know, hey, how come they never really fully explained the smoke monster in Lost?
Don't get me started on Lost again.
They did. They did, actually. But
not to my liking. Nope. So, all right, what else do you guys want to talk about?
Well, before we end this thing, I want to talk about the Star Trek reboot, because this is something that seems to be very divisive among Star Trek fans, and I'm I mean, I don't really get it, because I dearly love the reboot. I think it's exactly what the series needed. Did J.J. Abrams change it? Yes, he obviously changed it. They did a reboot. They did a, you know, they did this timeline split, which is nothing new. You know, there's been this theory about for every decision we make, you know, there's a different timeline in a yeah. different universe. But I mean, the Star Trek universe has been so developed between all the series, all the movies, all the spinoffs, all the novelizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just it as a writer, it would be a nightmare to try and navigate that by going back and starting with these characters as new Starfleet cadets and graduates. So I don't blame them one bit for what they did. And what they've done is they've opened this up to anything can happen.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is probably why the big fanboys hate it so much, is because they want to be able to sit back and be all superior because they know everything that happens in the Star Trek universe and say, oh, yeah, well, this is the part where blah, 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 blah. Well, you can't do that. It's all been taken. The rug has been pulled out from under those guys. So they're yeah. all upset. That's my theory anyway.
That's probably
You say that, but the second movie is basically the Wrath of Khan all over again.
Yeah, but and I'll tell you what, here's the thing that
yes and no.
Here's the thing that ticked me off is that in the original Wrath of Khan, Spock died and then, you know, he was resurrected the next movie. This one, it was Kirk died and well, actually they both died and they brought him back to life with Khan's blood. And I thought, well, that's kind of a cheap ploy. And I was like, wait yeah. a minute. That one had me depressed a little bit because it's like, come on, you could have done better.
I wasn't crazy about that either, and it was kind of shoehorned in there. It was definitely a Deus Ex Machina moment, but considering all the good things in that movie, it really didn't bog it down a lot to me. It, you know, there were a few points deducted because of that, and there were a couple other minor quibbles or whatever that I had about it. Quibbles. I had some quibbles about the tribbles.
Yeah. See, I think tribbles would have improved things.
I think so too. But hey, but at least did explain.
The whole thing was really good.
At least they did explain how the Klingons got those funky things, ridges. That's from the original Klingons not having ridges and the new Klingons having ridges. They explained it, genetic mutations and manipulation. So that was cool.
Very interesting.
So I like
that. I don't know, man. I'm going to have to part ways with you on this, Eric. I did not like it. I really didn't. It's a pale imitation of an original thing. And I just have to say I'm so tired of retreads of old ideas. I'd really like to see something new. I'm really tired of seeing properties trotted out again and again and again and again.
Hey, but Billy
Shanks. Point where it's just diminishing returns after yeah. a while.
But hey, Billy Shakespeare said there's nothing new under the sun, right? Come on.
Might that well is very true. Yeah.
Well, and I'm in the minority on this, but I mean the classic Star Trek cast towards there were a couple of exceptions, but with every movie it started to get weaker and more convoluted and weaker and weaker, and then the next generation, I'm sorry, I don't really like any of the Next Generation movies. They what? All seem pretty weak to me.
Bite
yeah,
your I didn't, tongue.
Yeah,
I
really.
Didn't like any of them.
If I could reach through this and, phone line and slap you, I might.
I don't think that they're terrible, but they just really, I mean, I don't even, I've seen them all at least a couple of times, and I'd be hard pressed to even talk about any of the plot details from any of them because they just didn't leave any impression on me other than the fact that Data was played out to death and I never ever want to see that character again. I'm sorry. I couldn't care less about what happens to Data or Data's quest to become human. It just got so tired. I mean, it was overplayed in the series and then they just they carried it on 10 times as much in the movies and it really irked me. I was like, I'm just so over this storyline. Well, but that's me. So when they came along,
you know, J.J. Abrams is such a creative individual and has so many interesting ideas. Wouldn't you have preferred to see him come up with something new rather than, you know, put out a Star Trek movie?
I think a lot of that was fan-based because they wanted to see – I mean, Khan is like one of the best Star Trek movies out there, The Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
And I think a lot of fans wanted to see that.
He is the best, yeah.
And I think that was a fan-based decision, I'm guessing anyway, because it's the only explanation I can come up with. other than to get Benedict Cumberbatch in a Star Trek movie.
But the thing is, that movie is so good. Mm-hmm. It's really tugs at the heartstrings. It's got great action. It's got a fantastic plot. Do you really think that you have anything new to bring to the table that you can do better than that movie already did? I would say no. This movie does nothing better than the original.
But it doesn't really copy the plot of Star Trek II. It just takes the character from Star Trek II and, you know, in this alternate universe, which is, you know, decades before they ever, you know, in the original universe, which is decades before they ever even meet Khan in Space Seed. And they, I mean, it was, I don't, it was pandering to the fans. I mean, I'll agree with that. That, you know, he was wanting to say, okay, let's take this character that everyone knows and loves, or, you know, in quotations, and put him, you know, put him in this alternate timeline, and we'll cast Benedict Cumberbatch in the role, and who I you know, can do no wrong. The guy is amazing in every role he ever does, even though he doesn't have rich Corinthian leather like Marco Montalban.
or Hervé Villechaize as a sidekick, either one, yeah.
Yeah, but I would be really hard pressed to tell you what the plot of the new Star Trek movie was. I would be really hard if you asked me to summarize it or tell you what the plot was. I don't know that I could do it very well. It didn't stick. It wasn't memorable.
Yeah,
whereas I'll tell you one thing. The plot for the original was very memorable. You knew exactly why things were happening.
Well, I'll tell you one thing they could have done. They could have gone that through the whole movie and never once said he was Khan. And it would have still been that's what would have made it a complete different. Through the beginning of the movie, you didn't know who he was. And they could have kept it that way. And I think that would have still been a strong movie. And I think that, you know, they taking out the Khan stuff, I think it would have been all right.
See, that's a weakness of it. I mean, he is Khan. Khan is an iconic villain from Star Trek. And yet, you could have called him anything, and it wouldn't have changed the movie one iota.
Like I said, it's definitely pandering to the fans to make him Khan. That was a calculated move on their part. And, you know, whether for better or for worse, I enjoyed the references. I mean, both of the new reboot movies are just filled from top to bottom with references to classic episodes and to previous characters. I don't know if you caught in Star Trek Into Darkness, there's one throwaway scene where they're in the loading bay of the Enterprise, and the ship that they the non-Enterprise ship that they take down to the planet so that they're not recognized as being a Starfleet. It's like some ship that they confiscated from someone named Mudd.
Yeah, I caught that. Yeah, I remember that. I'm like, where's the women?
Yeah.
So
I mean, I like those little references. It's totally a manipulative thing to say, you know, okay, hey fans, you need to catch this, you know, but it worked for me and it pulled me in and I was like, okay, I appreciate these little references you're peppering through the movie. And I will tell you that Star Trek Into Darkness is a meld between two storylines that don't necessarily marry all that well. I mean, you've got the Peter Weller character, who is this militaristic-minded character who wants to start a war with the Klingons because he thinks that a preemptive strike is going to prevent, you know, much more loss and bloodshed in the future. And then you've got the storyline with Cumberbatch, who, you know, as Khan, who could have been not Khan and it wouldn't have changed the storyline very much. I don't know that the marriage of those two storylines was 100% successful, but it wasn't a rough spot for me. I was conscious of this complexity that came about because of marrying these two storylines, but it didn't take me out of it. Obviously, because I mean, I love the movie. I just watched it again last night, and it's very exciting. They're much more action oriented, which is a big complaint that a lot of the classic fans have, which is really unfounded because, as we said before, the most popular of the classics movies was the second one, The Wrath of Khan. That is by far the most action oriented of any of the Star Trek movies, and it's not representative of the series, which was very more slow paced and cerebral and thought out, and it's not, it doesn't fit within that mold. So to complain about this one being too action oriented when we've already established that Star Trek II is one of the best Star Trek movies ever made and is 100% action oriented is really an unfounded argument.
I agree. I mean, the fact that it's action oriented is not a strike for me.
Right.
For me, it's just that I've already seen this story and I've seen it done better. But it's not the action that I have an issue with at all. It's the lens flare. Can we talk about lens flare?
Oh, I know. Yes, he does go overboard with those in the first one. He calms down on the second one. There's still a few in there, but it's not as bad as the first one.
It's definitely not near as bad where, you know, it was the USS Apple Genius Bar, and it was just ridiculous.
Does go overboard with those lens flares in the first one. But here's the thing, and hopefully, you know, all these fans that have been put off by what's happened in the first two of the movies will give the third one, whatever form it may take, another chance, because those were both building the mythology, okay? They haven't even – they at the end of the second one, they actually embark on their five-year mission, okay? So the first two movies really are just set up. And I think that he's just trying to get the fans on board and get everything established. I really think that this next movie, which I don't think is even going to be directed by Abrams, I think it's just going to be produced by him because he's busy doing the Star Wars movie, is going to be really the first of the quote unquote Star Trek universe movies. So I'm real curious to see what they do with it and very excited. And we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens.
Well, I think as sci-fi fans, anybody, and Star Trek fans especially, I think anybody will give this third one a chance no matter what. I think it'll still people will still go see it. So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Even though I've been throwing stones at this movie this entire time, let's be real. I'm still going to see the third one.
Exactly.
Probably on opening day, I'll be there watching it.
Yeah. Well, same with with Star Wars. You know, now that Disney's taken over, a lot of people complaining, but I guarantee it's going to sell out.
It can't be any worse than the last three.
Exactly what I was going to say. They could be doing this new movie on autopilot, and it would be better than the last three movies combined.
They
so there's no
Mouse
there's no chance
better.
It could be worse.
there is no chance that it's going to be worse than those three.
And hey, they got J.J. Abrams, so you know they're not going to be worse. So all right, well, I do want to say that I'm looking extremely forward to the Marvel year this year with Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America. I just can't wait for this year to be over, actually, and get those movies watched.
There is one thing that I wanted to jumped into last week. What do you guys think about the Marvel deal with Netflix with the four new series that are going to be on Netflix?
Didn't know about
it. I haven't heard that much. I knew about it. I just haven't heard much since the original announcement. I know that they're going to do a Daredevil movie. But it's going to be a complete reboot. It's not going to be Ben Affleck because he's now in the DC universe.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I never even saw the Daredevil movie, and I didn't see the spinoff that they did.
Electra.
I didn't see either of those.
I didn't think the Daredevil was that bad. It takes a lot of flack for being a bad movie. It really wasn't that bad.
You know, the
it
only
was perfectly
really,
acceptable.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't really like about it was the leather. Daredevil costume, but it's a comic book movie. I would have gone to see it even if no matter what. I'm there for comic book movies, Marvel or DC. I'm there for them. And this one, I watched it. I liked it. I liked the villain, Bullseye. I loved Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin in that.
My only concern is that Marvel is moving forward with all these different projects. I'm just a little bit worried that they're going to get watered down, that they're taking on too much, and that it's going to affect the overall quality of all these projects. I mean, I'm as excited as the next person is about more, you know, the more comic book movies and TV series, the better. But I just don't want to see it impact the quality, the overall quality of the work that they're doing, because it's been so good so far. Iron Man 2 and 3 accepted.
Well, any ideas of what they are going to be doing on this Netflix venture?
Well, I do know. I mean, they're doing. Let's see, I can remember the four that they were talking about. They're doing a Power Man show, aren't they? Gosh, I really should have looked this up before I started talking about that.
Yeah, I've heard something about a Power Man show. Wasn't it going to be Iron Fist and Power Man together, or is it just going to be Power? I've heard something about both of those guys. But
I think that might be right.
And
I just think it's interesting to bring original properties to Netflix as a way of getting them out there.
Yeah.
Instead of doing television shows, you know, to strike a deal with Netflix and to make content specifically for that.
Yeah. Well, it seems to work for Kevin Spacey and that show he's got, so...
Oh, hell yeah. I am a big, big cheerleader for Netflix. I mean, when they first said that they were doing House of Cards, I was like, okay, how's this going to work out? Where are they getting their budget from? How are they going to actually compete with cable and network television? And then when House of Cards came out, I was blown away. I was like, wow, this is very polished. And this is absolutely can go toe to toe with anything that's on cable or network television. So, since then, I've been all about Netflix, and the fact that they've gone to Netflix instead of cable or television, I'm all the better. And the fact that when they do a series on Netflix, they release all the episodes at once, which means you can watch them in whatever order, whatever time period you want. That's a big plus too.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree. And just to get the details on this, there are four television shows that they're going to be producing: Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Be the four characters they'll be developing in four different series that's going to culminate in a miniseries event called The Defenders.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, Netflix is committed to four shows with 13 episodes in each one of the shows.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, what was that second one you mentioned?
Jessica Jones. That's the one I'm least familiar with.
Yeah. I'm not at all with that one.
She had a series called Alias. It was the comic book series.
Okay. Can't say I know that one. But I do know the TV series Alias.
Yeah, me too. J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Yep, another J.J. Abrams thing.
So, okay. All right, I'll have to check into those. Because I Luke Cage and Iron Fist, well, Luke Cage is Power Man, or Power Man, that's right. But so
right.
Those two, I've always been fans of theirs. They're like little lesser-known heroes, if you will. But they've got such great storylines in all the comics, and they have them on the Ultimate Spider-Man Disney cartoon series. They're both on there with Spider-Man. They're part of his team, so I'd like to see those characters further develop.
Well, originally, when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was being teased, they thought that Power Man was going to be part of that show.
Yeah.
Just because of the, that Mike Peterson character.
Yeah, now he's known as Deathlok, so.
Yeah.
So, which I think that's a better move, though. Because I like Deathlok's another one of those lesser known villain heroes, anti heroes, whatever, that's kind of cool. So I like the way they went with that one rather than going with a well known name or a better known name. So
yeah, but see, once again, here is Marvel doing a thing where you take four distinct properties, build them up over a series, and then have it lead to a major crossover event.
Yeah.
Again, here's Marvel doing their whole big movie system on a smaller scale for television.
Yep.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They really do. It's amazing.
I think it doesn't necessarily mean they know what they're doing. I think it means that they realize, hey, the fans love this stuff. That's the reason our comic books are popular. Let's keep it going. They do know what they're doing because we've seen this formula working with all their movies and stuff. So but I think it's also they realize, hey, we've got a property here that has been untapped for too long. And I think that's a lot of it.
But I think Tim's right, though, in what he's saying about this formula that they've come up with, which I don't know, maybe they didn't come up with it, maybe it was done somewhere else before, but this idea of it takes a lot of patience and patience is not something that studios usually are known for having.
Right.
No.
To take all these separate properties, and these movies all did pretty good on their own, but they never didn't do anywhere near the business that Avengers did.
Right.
But if they hadn't had Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and the Incredible Hulk, if they hadn't had all these movies separately before Avengers, and no one can really say what would have happened, but I would suspect that Avengers would not have been nearly as popular as it was, having the support of all these individual movies underneath it to push it up there, and that people were already familiar with these characters. Whereas if they just came out with an Avengers movie, I mean, yeah, the comic book nerds would definitely come out in droves to see it, but that movie made so much money, it obviously was not just comic book fans that went to go see the Avengers, and I'm not so sure that they would have been gone to see that movie if these other movies hadn't come before.
You got a point, but you just never really know. And I mean, look at it this way: it's, at least they're not retelling origin stories over and over again. I mean, look at how many times have we seen Superman's origin story? I'm like, come on! I mean, how many times do we have to realize that Batman's mom and dad got killed? You know, it's like over and over again. That's what DC's doing. Where Marvel said, "Okay, here it is, take it," you know.
Yeah. And then except for the Spider-Man.
Yeah. Now the Spider-Man bugs me. That one. Yeah. Pardon the pun, but
that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah. Like, why? I didn't. That's one thing that ticked me off about that movie, and the only thing that ticked me off about that movie was, like, we know how he started. We know, you know. But, I mean, here's another thing. In the retelling of this, I still don't think they needed to do this, the retelling of his origin story. But in their new origin story, they're actually creating more villains, which is going to make it a little more interesting in the Spidey world. This Oscorp is the center for all the villains ever created. Because if you look at the trailers for this new Spider-Man movie, you see Doc Ock's tentacles, you see the Vulture's wings, you see something marked Venom, you see, well, of course, in the movie, you got Electro, and trying to think, who is the other villain? Oh, Rhino. So I can see that they're starting the storyline over again just so they can develop the villains from one central location, which I'm not sure how that's going to work, whether it will work, but I'll still wait and see.
Well, Spider-Man 3 proved that more villains makes a better movie, right? Right?
Well, you know. And especially when one villain turns into a good guy. That's that. So, yeah, that's right. I mean, well, get, you know, one villain per movie, we're good.
Yep.
But, yeah, I don't know. We're going to see. I mean, one of the big storylines that I've loved about Spider-Man is the Sinister Six, which, you know, the Sandman, Doc Ock, and all those guys. Anyway, all the guys. I always like those battles because little wimpy Peter Parker whips their butts every freaking time.
I'm interested in seeing Mysterio. Let's bring in Mysterio.
I know, right? And I don't know if you've been reading the comics, but in the latest comics, Mysterio, it's no longer the guy that their origin. It's basically the Hobgoblin has bought all these costumes and all this artillery from these former villains, and he's now selling them out to the highest bidder. And so the guy that bought the Mysterio costume is a wimp. I mean, every time they get busted, you know, by some superhero, he goes, okay, I'm just here for the ride. You know, he always surrenders. It's like he's French or something. I don't know. But it's weird. Every single issue I've read is like Mysterio just says, okay, quit. Anyway, but yeah, a good original Mysterio, that'll be a cool villain.
So have you been reading the new Spider-Man, the Superior Spider-Man comic?
Yeah, even though I'm pissed off, I keep reading it.
I have to say I'm going to be sad to see him go. I like it the way it is.
Really? You like,
yeah,
you like
totally.
You like Dr. Spider-Puss?
I totally do. Totally down with that. I would be happy to never see Peter Parker again.
Oh, man. No.
Wow. You're going to get a lot of emails about that.
Oh, I know. I'm going to get a lot of flack for that, but... To me, it's the most interesting the series has been in a long time.
I will say that it is very strong in the writing. I will say the storyline is very strong. And had it been created without Peter Parker as Spider-Man ever, you know, if this had been like the original series starting out, I think I would have liked it too. But I'm a fan of Peter Parker. I like the fact that, hey, anybody could be this hero. He could be anybody. And, you know, power to the nerds. I mean, he was the original nerd. And, you know, I just like the Peter Parker being the hero thing. But I will agree with you that this whole Superior Spider-Man has been strong. But I want him to bring back Peter Parker.
Now, back on just a bit of news that's come out, and I'm sure that this is going to be expanded on a little bit more in the special on Tuesday about the Age of Ultron that's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
But I was reading some, you know, some news tidbits or whatever, and they were saying that because Mark Ruffalo's Hulk hasn't had his own movie yet, although he's definitely scheduled to have at least two movies coming up. But because of that, and that Hawkeye hasn't had much of a backstory or much screen time yet, that the next Avengers movie is going to be giving both of those characters more screen time than I guess the other characters.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure what that's going to mean exactly, but I know a lot of people didn't like Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye. I haven't read the comics, so I had nothing to go from, but I mean, I liked his character. I agree that he didn't get as much development as anyone else got, but you know that's what they're going to try to remedy. But my only problem is you know why didn't they have Hawkeye played by Alan Alda? I mean that just seems unnatural.
That would have been a wimpy Hawkeye. But well, see, they did get screen time like in the Thor movie. Hawkeye was in that. He was like part of the Shield agents there. That's what it was. And then also Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. She, you know, it was in Iron Man 2 very strongly, if you ask me.
Yes.
And so they didn't have as much screen time, but and no backstory ever told about them. But they do have.
But see, Hawkeye in both the movies has been like mind controlled and hasn't really been himself. So that's been the point of contention.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll get a TV series based on him. That'd be cool.
I personally would love to see a strong espionage film starring, you know, those two.
Yeah, yeah, Hawkeye exactly.
Black Widow. I think it would be really fantastic to step completely away from the superhero antics and just go with a straight-up classic espionage film.
I think
that's been part of what they've been trying to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and deliberately not bringing on any superpowers for a while because they wanted to say, look, you know, we can have a comic book storyline without having superpowered characters, at least for a while, that these characters can stand on their own. Now, you know, it's a matter of opinion on whether they've succeeded in that or not, but I'm still watching. I'm still a fan, so.
It's kind of hard to not be, so. One other thing about the Marvel before I want to wrap this up here. The aspect of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like you said, no superpowers at the beginning. Now they've built what, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is supposed to be. Now they're actually starting to bring in more superheroes. They had Sif anyway. They've got Deathlok coming up. Well, he's been an ongoing storyline. What do you guys think about if they did, like, say, let's say Robert Downey Jr. makes an appearance as Iron Man? How's that going to go?
Well, that's going to break their budget right there for like the next 10 years.
Probably.
Yeah, I was going to say he'd do a quick fly through and it'd cost him several $100,000.
Exactly.
Well, we could CGI it. Or Mark Ruffalo, throw the Hulk in there. Give him
some like
more.
That.
He's more affordable, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh.
I
yeah, what is
the cheapest Avenger?
But actually you bring up an interesting idea because Iron Man doesn't belong to Robert Downey Jr. He's a Marvel property. Right. What if you just had like a scene where Iron Man's in the background? I mean, he doesn't speak. You're not using his voice. You just see like a CGI or someone in a suit in the background. Yeah. I wonder if they would do that or if they could get away with it. I would assume they could get away with that because it's not Downey's, you know, property.
Yeah.
But would they do that? That's the question.
Well, then again, you know, I mean, it'd be like more of an Easter egg type thing, really, or a cameo like Stan Lee does. But I don't know if they didn't have Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark in some way. I think they could lose a little bit because, you know, hey, that's part of his appeal, is his whole Tony Stark aspect. So I think they'd have to keep it a little dual. Of Iron Man and Tony Stark, so I don't know, but
I think personally, I'm more interested in some of the more minor heroes from the Marvel universe. I like the idea of Deathlok being part of the show.
Yep,
I would like him to be more of a part of the show.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Maybe that's a great place to develop the minor characters. That, you know, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That'd be a great place for. Actually, that'd be a really great place for him to develop minor characters. Eventually work
out. Yeah, I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the farm league team, like, you know, in baseball. You know, that's where they start players off before they graduate to the big leagues.
Yep.
Sure. I mean, you're never going to see Deathlok in a Hollywood film. That's just not going to happen. But, you know, this is a perfect place, a perfect venue for that character.
Yep. And there's so and Marvel has so many minor characters that.
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah, they could just easily throw a few in here and there. But I'll tell you one thing. I am so looking forward to James Spader. There we go. I'm thinking
David Spade.
Yeah. Anyway, James Spader as Ultron, as the voice of Ultron. I think that's just gonna.
Oh, I didn't know about that. That's cool.
Yeah, he's gonna be the voice of Ultron, and I mean, Ultron's gonna be completely CGI like the Hulk, really. But his voice is gonna be, and I think that's gonna just be so awesome.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on David Spade as Ultron.
That would have been good, too.
That would be fantastic.
A little Joe Dirt Ultron going on.
Just this really sarcastic character. It's like, all right.
Yeah. That's his weapon, is his biting sarcasm.
I'm Ultron. I'm making copy.
I'm ruling the world.
Well, I don't know why he jumped in my head, but hey. I'm just so looking forward to James Spader as Ultron. You guys watch. I'm going to edit this podcast. I'm going to leave that part out, and you guys are going to look foolish.
Oh, that's fine. I'm used to that.
But anyway.
Well, he's kind of having a career renaissance right now. He's got the Blacklist.
Yep.
He's got the Blacklist, which is a hit TV show. Mm-hmm. And now he's going to be, in Avengers 2, which is arguably going to be one of the highest grossing pictures of all time, yeah, I'm sure, when it comes out.
I think the only
one question about that.
I think the only one that's going to top that is this Superman Batman movie put out by DC, because there's so much mystery by it.
I'd be willing to bet the Avengers is going to kill that.
I think it will too.
I think it will. Yeah.
I think it'll absolutely destroy whatever money that the Superman Batman film makes.
Yeah.
The Avengers had some backlash, which I don't really understand, but it's just overall, I mean, it really was received very positively across the board. Whereas the Superman movie, not so much. In fact, I'm one of the people that really just didn't enjoy it very much. And the last Batman movie I liked, but a lot of people didn't, and I can see where the complaints come in. So there's been some tarnish on the DC properties that, may or may not be overcome in the next installments.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the problems with the Superman is they just couldn't decide between Bo Duke or the guy from Waterworld to be his dad. So, that was the hard part. You know what? I think we should end this podcast right here and now before anything else gets weird. But I do want to pass along, anybody listening, if you want to comment to any of these, anything we've said, especially Tim, you could tweet me at Gil Wilson, and I will pass it along.
Thanks for throwing me under the bus there. That's fine.
Anyway, if you want to tweet me, it's at Gil Wilson. And if you guys want to give out your Twitters, have people
at
contact
Eric
you.
Bill, ERICBILL.
Mine is Tim Gone Mad.
Okay.
EIMGONMAD.
Oh, so no E at the end of gone. So, right. So
no
yeah.
E.
So you see there, you can tweet Tim. And if anything relates to the show on my Twitter feed, I will pass it along, and we'll read it live on the air. And if you want to, or not live because this is pre-recorded, but we will read it on the podcast. If there's if you got something to say, feel free to send it along to us. And other than that, don't forget, check us out nerduppodcast.blogspot.com, or you can search Nerd Up Podcast on iTunes. Subscribe there and never miss an episode. Make sure you just stay in contact with us and keep listening. In the meantime, that's it for the show this time around. Guys, thanks for joining me again. We've had with us Eric Billingsley and Tim Mattson, and I'm Gil T. Wilson. Folks, stay nerdy. Nerd up.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.